citizens! Welcome to the Fortress of Potitude. I'm Dave Michaels.
I'm Brian Betts.
And this is Beer Me a Movie! It's the show where me and Brian dress up in drag and play mothers to people who have never done movies before.
We are giving mother. That's what the kids say these days.
Is it? What does that mean?
Your guess is as good as mine.
I feel like I've officially approached that age where I don't understand kids anymore, and it makes, like, I feel old, and it makes me sound old. It's like, I know my lane. I'm literally going to see Third Eye Blind in 3 weeks in concert. That's where my life is right now.
Wow, they're old too, so.
They are old too, and I'm the only one who got excited for it. And someone's like, oh, you want to go see Third Eye Blind concert? I was like, is that a real fucking question? Did I grow up in the 90s? Fucking course I do.
Absolutely, I want to go to that.
Seen them twice before. Don't judge.
I've only seen him once.
Everyone's seen him, I feel like. It's a rite of passage. It's just like 90s kids bar mitzvah.
I didn't see them until like 2008, 2009, though.
That's fair. I didn't see him in 2006 and then 2009 again. So a weird roundabout way of saying this week, our final musical episode of the month, all musicals month. Brian, this is a proper musical.
This is a proper musical. And I'm so glad we did an actual proper musical.
This one comes to us from you, the audience, specifically Micah. He put this one into the Ghost of Roger Ebert list, and Ghost Roger Ebert said, fuck Cats, Hairspray from 2007, directed by Adam fucking Shankman.
Roger Ebert famous for saying, fuck Cats.
Want to get into this thing? I'm really curious to see how it does on the scoring system or whatever we'd call it. I don't know what it is, but we score movies. They line up with the Rotten Tomatoes critical score, audience score. We got to finish our beers.
Yeah. And we have not been doing a very good job so far in musical month.
No. For us being sluts for musicals, I feel like we're like 70s Nightwalkers. Just like, we'll take what we can get. This isn't good.
Pretty far under and over the actual score so far.
Just wait. Because next month, I start with the picks. Therefore, I get to set the theme a little bit for the month. Fold on your dicks. We're going to have a good time.
Very exciting. I'm nervous, but also
you
very
should
excited.
Be. You should be. Absolutely terrified. I can't wait.
Let's get into Hairspray. Our first category is casting.
10.
I mean, how could it not be?
It is almost flawless. I'm trying to think of any weak bit to it, and I cannot.
No, everybody showed up, and everybody's pulling their weight. Some of them more than they're used to.
Like John Travolta, because he had to wear the fat suit.
30-pound fat suit.
He played Edna Turnblad. And he is one of my favorite parts of this movie. But you also have Michelle Pfeiffer, Amanda Bynes, Christopher Walken, Queen Latifah, James Marsden, Brittany Snow, Zac Efron, Elijah Kelly, Allison Janney, Jerry Stiller, Paul Dooley, Taylor Barks, Ricky Lake, and John fucking Waters.
Incredible. No notes.
It's based on John Waters' 1988 film Hairspray as well, which they eventually turned into a Broadway musical in 2002. And then John Waters played a flasher in this, because of course he did. I love John Waters. And I'm happy we left the star of this movie until last, because Nikki fucking Blonsky.
Introducing.
This is a lot on one person's shoulders who's never done a movie before.
Yeah, and surrounded by so much star power, and she crushes it.
She is incredible in this movie.
She's so damn good.
It has to be a 10.
Absolutely.
Her opening song about Baltimore, it made me almost want to go there. And I love life. I don't want to die. But I like, I kind of want to go to her Baltimore.
I love how honest the song is. It's just like, yeah, the flasher next door, the drunk at the bar wishing me a good day at school. That's Baltimore, baby.
She's the eternal optimist. She makes me feel good about myself. And that's hard to do.
You all right, bud?
Oh, I got the Buffalo Tracing. I'll be just fine. Don't worry.
Oh, good. Why don't we figure out what this thing's about?
It's about walking on eggshells. That's what it's about.
Yeah, it sure is.
Brian's going to have to say a certain phrase multiple times.
Multiple times.
And I am giddy for it.
I'm not looking forward to it because it's going to be put to audio and available across the internet.
It's true. This movie is about fat shaming and racism. And I'm not so much worried about the fat shaming part.
Yeah, neither am I.
Let's get into this thing.
Baltimore, 1962. 16-year-old Tracy Turnblad, played by Nikki fucking Blonsky, and her friend Penny Pingleton, played by Amanda Bynes, are huge fans of a local teen dance television program called The Corny Collins Show, hosted by Corny Collins, played by James Marsden.
Amanda Bynes. She was a one-trick pony, for sure, but it was a phenomenal trick.
An excellent trick, and who knows how much of that was, you know, with recent documentaries and things coming to light about Nickelodeon. What can you say other than that Amanda Bynes?
She's really good in this.
She's excellent in this, and yeah. More eggshells to walk on.
Yeah, wasn't ready for Amanda Bynes' eggshells, but here we are. Even though we just had them not too long ago.
I feel like Amanda Bynes has been coming up a lot on the show, and that's strange, because she's not been in a lot.
No, she hasn't. Maybe we'll get there. Why would I even joke about that? We're not.
We're going to do an Amanda Bynes month?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to do She's the Man next, and that's it. We're done.
That's all that's left. I do have Amanda Bynes fact, fresh from IMDb.
Oh, God, I can't wait.
Penny is constantly seen eating lollipops. Amanda Bynes' father, who is a dentist, became very worried for her dental health, as it was estimated she ate about 40 lollipops a day. She told him that she wasn't really eating all of them, when in reality, she ate them all.
What is this, Willy fucking Wonka? The Johnny Depp one? All right.
Yeah. Tracy dreams of dancing on the show, which features students from her school, including mean girl Amber Von Tussle, played by Brittany fucking Snow, and the dreamy Link Larkin, played by Zac fucking Efron.
Zac Efron's too handsome.
It's just not necessary.
It's too much.
Like, do something with that face, because it's upsetting me.
He would have been a good Superman.
He would have been a good Superman.
Missed opportunity, but, I mean, when he gets a little older, maybe. When I say he gets a little older, he's not a kid anymore, but he's still got it, man. He's still got it.
Oh, he's still got it.
It's a good-looking movie.
On all fronts, absolutely. Speaking of which, Velma Von Tussle, Michelle fucking Pfeiffer, is Amber's mother and the station manager. And she only allows black dancers on the show once a month on Negro Day. Yikes.
That is a big ol' yikes. And I like how they open this movie with a newspaper article about segregation. So you kind of set the tone a little bit of what this is going to be about. Except it's about a whole lot more than just that.
Big time.
Because they weirdly MacGuffin pleasantly plump people just to get to the racist part.
Which is an interesting tactic. It's like getting a foot in the door, but like an extra wide foot.
It's more of a short foot than a wide foot. Nikki Blonsky's only 4'10".
That's fair.
I had a look. She is noticeably shorter than everybody.
Oh, except children.
Totally lines up with them. And weirdly, we'll get there.
We will, weirdly enough. When a spot opens up due to a mysterious 9-month leave of absence for one of the cast members.
What a joke.
Tracy auditions for the show, but she's rejected by Velma for her weight and progressive views.
And also her basic-ass dance style that they made them do for the audition.
They did. They're like, all right, everybody do this dance. And then they made fun of them for doing the dance.
Michelle Pfeiffer's a really good baddie.
She is. It wasn't until halfway through the production that she even realized her character was racist. And that might be a problem.
That is not great.
She was worried halfway through production that people weren't going to like her anymore because she's playing this racist character. And Shankman was like, don't worry about it. It's a character.
I feel like that's on like the level of like Ralph Fiennes in Schindler's List, like halfway through production just goes, wait a second. Am I the bad guy?
Do you guys think maybe we might be the bad guys?
Oh, that Mitchell and Webb look is a hell of a sketch show if you haven't seen it.
Tracy is sent to detention for skipping class for the audition. There, she meets Seaweed, Elijah Kelly, and she learns some new dance moves and befriends the entire Negro Day cast.
Let's talk about how this school functions, because I have no clue.
Not a single idea.
Detention happens in the middle of the day, possibly during a period of the day. And then there's a bus outside that takes students to the Corny Collins show. So are they just like going to school here because it's convenient to the show? I don't understand any of this.
It doesn't make any sense, but I also haven't spent a ton of time in Baltimore. It could just be a normal thing there. Maryland's weird.
Maryland is weird.
With her new moves, Tracy impresses Cyclops at the sock hop and he chooses her for the show's cast.
You watching X-Men 97?
Yeah, of course I'm watching X-Men 97.
It's real good.
It's so good. I haven't had a show that I was using as an escape affect me the way episode 5 of that show did.
I think that's fair, but the only other thing I'm really watching is the last season of Curb. So that's going to happen. Like, anything is going to affect me more than Curb has affected me.
It was just surprisingly heavy for a continuation of a really kind of lame cartoon from the 90s.
It was a pretty lame cartoon from the 90s, except for that one episode where Professor X made Magneto relive the Holocaust. Never forget that happened.
That did absolutely happen.
Tracy's on the show now. She dances so good that Zac Efron's like, hey, this girl's real good. And then for some reason, Velma is just like, the hot one said she's cool.
Corny Collins was like, how are you going to have the Corny Collins show without Corny Collins? I want that girl.
Corny Collins is progressive, man. He even said, my dream in this show is to be completely integrated.
Yeah.
And she's like, absolutely not. And then James Marsden, that handsome son of a bitch, is just like, no, you just wait. You just wait.
You just wait. And Nikki Blonsky said the same thing in her audition, and that's why Velma was like, get on out of here.
This whole entire city seems to revolve around one television show.
A show for teenagers that airs sometime in the middle of the day after school.
Hello, this is the mayor of Baltimore, 1962. There's one television show that is completely affecting the politics, and we're going to focus entirely on that and not the infrastructure of a bridge that we're going to build in 10 years from now.
We have architects working on the plans, but they keep watching this damn Corny Collins show instead.
They want to keep learning how to do the stretchy chicken dance or whatever it was.
Stretchy chicken. That is what it was.
I watched this movie twice, admittedly, which is too many times, by the way. This movie is wall-to-wall music, and oh my God, that is, it's too much. It's way too much. I enjoyed the shit out of it. It's too much.
It is too much, which is probably why of our month of musicals, only one of them was a proper musical.
Yeah, we're bad at this. Wait till next month.
As Tracy's popularity rises, she threatens Amber's chances at the Miss Teenage Hairspray pageant and grows closer to Link.
I love this chemistry between Link and Tracy. It's really, really good.
She's so surprised that he even notices her. And he's like, this girl's pretty nifty.
She is. She's genuine. And he's surrounded by all these fake people that he's genuinely impressed by her.
Yeah, like Amber, who is now the 2-time Miss Teenage Hairspray and going for 3.
We'll get there. I want to figure out how that competition works because I don't know. Not understand it.
I also want to know how it's connected to Miss Baltimore Crabs.
Miss Baltimore Crabs shouldn't be a thing. Like, no one should call that. That.
It's very interesting. Miss Baltimore Crabs, which, of course, was Amber's mother, Velma. Michelle Pfeiffer,
yeah.
Catwoman was Miss Crabs, and now she wants her daughter to be Miss Hairspray. I don't get it.
I don't get it either.
Mr. Pinky, Jerry fucking Stiller of Mr. Pinky's Boutique reaches out, wanting to make Tracy a spokeswoman, so she and her agoraphobic mother, Edna, played by John fucking Travolta, go down to the store and get makeovers.
John Travolta got cast in this movie because he's the biggest name in movie musicals still.
Still, yeah. And this definitely helped. Like, if he wasn't already, like, Grease, 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 now it's like Grease, Hairspray.
He's the reason for half this cast, I feel like, though, because when they got Travolta, Travolta said, hey, Christopher Walken will make a pretty damn good husband role in this thing.
Yeah.
And Michelle Pfeiffer would make a pretty good villain role in this. Travolta's the reason why this thing got the 10 that it deserved.
It's almost like Travolta wishes he was Batman in Batman Returns.
Don't we all? I mean, what a ridiculous statement. Maybe we didn't need to talk about cats after all, because to quote Danny DeVito, Batman Returns, that's the pussy I'm looking for.
If you could recast anyone in this movie with Danny DeVito, who would it be?
Sadly, probably Walken.
That is sad. I would probably go with Zac Efron.
Maybe if you have like the Scorsese Irishman, I'm going to use air quotes, technology, the de-aging technology. I've seen the Irishman. That's not technology. Different movie.
Very different.
Unsure better, unsure worse.
Just different.
Not a bad place to be.
Tracy introduces Penny to Seaweed, sparking a romance between them, which is actually illegal in Maryland at that time.
Yeah, but Penny's so horny in this movie, she'll break the law for it. She doesn't care. And also her mother, Allison Janney, she's like a Bible thumper.
Big time.
She wants to stick it to her old ma.
Exactly. I mean, any kind of person in that upbringing is going to lash out.
100%.
At a party at Maybell's record store, Queen Latifah, it's announced that Velma has canceled Negro Day. That's the third time I've had to say that.
Yes, it is.
Tracy proposes a march for integration.
Tracy is the force behind change.
Yes.
She is such a force for good in this movie that it's like uplifting watching her.
Big time. It's really cool to see.
What a performance, man.
Link is hesitant to join the march, fearing for his entertainment career, which strains his relationship with Tracy. Meanwhile, Velma attempts to seduce Tracy's father, Wilbur, who's of course Christopher fucking Walken, and Edna walks in on them and misinterprets the whole situation, causing a rift that'll probably be hard to come back from.
Well, that's because Christopher Walken owns a joke shop, and the entire time, he's just doing jokes to Michelle Pfeiffer.
He scares her with a gorilla mask, and then she's like trying to seduce him, and he's just like, I've got one of those hand buzzer thingies, and it's wonderful.
It is wonderful. This fight lasts for 5 minutes.
Yeah, and the very next scene, Edna and Wilbur reconcile, and Edna supports Tracy's decision to protest for integration.
To a point.
She's not going to march with them, but she's like, you do what you got to do.
This entire movie is about growth, be it cultural, be it personal, because Edna used to be a hot thang, John Travolta. And then she got shuttered in for 10 years, I think they said in this movie. And
yeah.
She's now just doing laundry for people out of her apartment, hasn't left. Her daughter gets famous, or at least regionally famous. And Edna decides it's time for her to leave this apartment, to go out to the world again. And she's so blown away by this world. She's so careful in this world. It's why she makes the perfect manager for Tracy, her daughter. As Tracy says, I just absolutely love this arc that everybody goes on. It's so good.
Yeah, every single character. It's amazing.
Edna's is probably my favorite.
I agree.
Like John Travolta's flexing acting muscles that you wouldn't expect him to have to flex.
Yeah, and all the while nailing that Baltimore accent.
If you want to know how to do a Baltimore accent, it's just think of the grossest thing in your head and that's it. Just make noises for that.
It's like the Philly accent, but worse.
Do you know what's a worse accent than that? And this is like a real specific one.
Okay, what is it?
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island.
Small state, horrible accent because it's not quite New York, but it's not quite Boston.
That sounds pretty obnoxious.
It's gross. Absolutely gross.
Tracy joins the protest on the day of the crowning of Miss Teenage Hairspray. Their march is stopped by police, so she hides in Penny's fallout shelter.
Weird choice. The person leading this march decides to fuck off.
She's like, oh shit, there's cops. I gotta go.
Well, she actually sort of does have to run because she does hit a cop with a sign and then doesn't think it's a big deal. And it's one of those like, that's not great. You don't want to do that.
Weirdly enough, all the cops start making it seem like something worse happened to them that actually transpired, and it's their word against hers, and, well, you know.
It's a lot like the guard in Tommy Boy, when Tommy walks into the bank, and he's like, everybody listen up! And then the guy's like getting interviewed after that, he's like, and then he hit me repeatedly in the head with a hammer. And the story just keeps escalating with this cop and how injured he actually is.
Yeah. Penny is punished by her religious mother for helping Tracy, but Seaweed and friends rescue them both. And then Seaweed and Penny express their love during their escape.
That's a pretty good makeout.
It is. I felt things.
Yeah, this movie is like loaded with porn tube kind of buzzwords or buzz acronyms because here she's all tied up on the bed and then Seaweed does the makeout as he's untying her. So you got your BDSM. You got the relationship between Link and Tracy. So there's your BBW. Like, we're covering bases here.
Yeah, we're clicking all the categories, one at a time.
And it's 1962, so no one's cracked the code yet on the word step in porn.
That's right.
They didn't have to have clickbait or anything like that yet. It just was. It was the golden age.
Nobody's pretending to be related. It's a beautiful time.
This was a time of woods porn, people. Back when the world was innocent. And you could just go into a woods and find a log and there it was. Bush.
There it was.
Wasn't the only thing in the forest.
So there's a bush and there's a bush. Those were two different homonyms. Homophones. We talk about woods porn an awful lot on this show.
It's a fascination. Because everyone knows exactly what it is who are of a certain age.
It's just part of the millennial experience, I guess.
It really is. That and the broken vending machine. Everyone knew it.
Link realizes his love for Tracy and seeks her out, ready to join the fight for integration.
After he couldn't, because he was going to get his big break.
Right.
And he had to make a choice. And I appreciate that he had to make a choice.
Yeah, the talent agents were at the show that day. He was like, I got to show up because my future depends on this. And he's like, no, the right thing to do is to go out there and protest.
And go get some.
And get some. Obviously get some.
Obviously get some.
Velma tries to prevent Tracy from entering the studio and stuffs the ballot box at the pageant with votes for Biden. I mean, Amber.
Oh, gosh. Like, you know that you just got a red hat excited, like, briefly.
Right? Like, oh, he said it. He said the thing. I knew they were doing it.
They finally set it up here in a movie. That makes it true. Everything they say is true. I had woods porn. I jerked off in a tree.
It's not even a political podcast, but he said the thing, so I know it happened.
Quick question. Not a political podcast. Have you ever paid $130,000 to not have sex with a woman?
No. No, I've never done that.
Okay. I'm just checking. It's just my question I've been asking people. I feel like this next part of the movie you really enjoyed because it's real heisty.
It is super heisty.
You have people like locking doors from the inside and Tracy sneaking in a giant hairspray can that they use as a battering ram conveniently to get to this place. And then she just like sneaks out of it. And now she's just loose on the run. And I love watching a little Nikki Blonsky run around in the background in the shadows.
It's phenomenal.
It's wonderful.
It's so good.
But it's amazing how many cops are involved in trying to keep Tracy out of this studio. Because they know the second she's in there, game over. She's right? going to light it up with her fucking charm.
Oh, that sweet girl is going to get on camera and then there's nothing we cops can do anymore.
It's exactly what happens because Tracy not only gets in the studio, she's able to climb up into the rafters, position herself on a rocket ship that happens to be there and then come down onto the stage and it's game on.
She literally lands on set just like, here I am. And she dances with Link. And then Link beckons little Inez to join the pageant.
Right, Queen Latifah's daughter and Seaweed's sister.
Yeah. And the crowd goes absolutely wild for little Inez's dance moves, and she wins the pageant, officially integrating the show.
I love James Marsden so much in this entire scene, because he's having a ball watching all of this getting stuck to Velma. I love it.
Good.
And it's even to the point that he has his whole dance number too, and he's really, really good in this movie. And Queen Latifah is the one who hosts the Negro Day, along with James Marsden, whenever it happens.
Yeah.
And I love how he goes up to her and says, it's your turn for you to have your moment. And I got like chills watching that.
So good.
Queen Latifah brings it every single time she's on screen.
So good. And the way Corny Collins, who's this show is his namesake, is just like, hey, you're the host now. Get in here. Phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. This whole ending is beautiful.
Velma's voter fraud is exposed live on the air and she's fired by the show's sponsors. And Tracy and Link share a kiss as everyone else celebrates.
And that's Hairspray.
That's it.
It's a movie that started out with fat shaming, ended up integrating the entire city of Baltimore because now people could dance together on one television show. Everyone's like, yeah, now we're cool.
The most important television show in all of Baltimore.
Story and motivation. I'm struggling between a 7 and 8.
I would go 8 for sure.
Sold.
I think the story is pretty airtight. Other than all the circumstances surrounding Velma and how she can be fired from her own station and she, I don't know, there's a lot of questions surrounding her.
Yeah, we'll talk about her in a second.
Yeah. Let's talk about protagonist, Tracy Turnblad.
10.
10.
I loved her in this movie.
She's phenomenal.
Just a force for good. And there's nothing behind it other than she's a good person. Nikki Blonsky is so genuine in this role that she makes you feel good watching her.
I completely agree. She's phenomenal. It's all so believable.
It really, really is. It has to be a 10 in my mind.
Agreed, 10. Antagonist.
I got questions.
Velma Von Tussle, or maybe just the concept of racism.
But is it? Because Tracy got really big when she came onto this show. She was like the star of the show all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And they're selling merchandise for her and whatnot. But then you have Velma, who's trying to keep the show segregated. And she's trying to keep it so segregated that she needs to fuck Tracy's dad.
That is pretty severe. But at the same time, how much of it is motivated by keeping the show segregated and how much of it is motivated by her wanting Amber to be crowned Miss Hairspray?
It's complicated.
She has two motivating factors here.
She does, and it's oil and water here. Pick one of your factors, go hard there.
Either love your daughter or be racist, but you can't be both.
You can't be both.
It's too much.
That's like a dangerous thing to say, because you know that there's like a dad and a daughter listening to this episode right now. And the dad just looked at the daughter and went, fuck you. And it's like, whoa, no, he chose that way.
He chose racism?
God, man. Breaking up families now because of Hairspray.
A lot of father-daughter combos listening to this episode, I'm sure.
That's right. Gather around the radio and come listen to Beer Me a Movie.
It's fun for the whole family.
Oh, you see what Dave just did? He talked about woods porn again.
Back in my day.
We didn't call it a vagina. When it was sexy, I called it a muff.
Wait, how old are you?
We used to say, what's the new pussycat, until that Tom Jones fella stole it from us.
We're taking it back.
Me and your grandmother would ask each other, what's new pussycat? And she would respond, oh, whoa, 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 whoa.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Sorry for getting so horny, people. And especially your grandparents, who totally just shot dust out. Like, you know, I did it. I got them off. I got your grandparents off this episode. You're welcome.
Family time with Dave. Everyone's getting horny. Antagonist?
It's four. I don't know. She's fine.
She's
just
she's
all
fine.
Mixed up inside.
She's mean. She's a bad person. She cheats at the pageant votes and gets caught.
Five.
Five.
I don't know. It's no higher than that.
I'm feeling pretty safe right now.
I'm not there yet. I haven't looked at the score, but I feel like we just balanced a little bit because we fanboyed and then we came down to earth a little.
We did.
I don't know where this is going to go.
Let's talk about director.
Adam fucking Shankman is so good.
Shankman. Absolutely crushing it.
Directed by and choreographed by.
Famous choreographer for years before this. Interesting group of movies this guy's done.
He doesn't really do the same thing twice, I think, because he's got The Wedding Planner, A Walk to Remember, Bringing Down the House, The Pacifier, Cheaper by the Dozen 2, Hairspray, Bedtime Stories, if you remember that one, a few music video kind of things strewn about in there. He's done television shows like Modern Family and Only Murders in the Building, Rock of Ages. He's done Glee, obviously.
Obviously.
He's all over the place in his career, but he does it well, or at least well enough.
It feels like all of these things have one thing in common, and that is the target demographic.
That's fair.
They're very different movies and TV shows and things, but they all have kind of the same target. He's very good at making movies for a specific type of person.
I think he did a really good job in this movie. And this is tough to do because there's a lot of musical numbers in this.
A ton.
I'm going to go 7.
Okay. That's respectable.
It is respectable because it's impressive pulling this thing off. There's a lot. I feel like it gets bottled a bit too much, but it all works.
A lot of people really caring about this one television show. 7 for director. Let's talk about the style and tone.
I think he got the 60s pretty down.
Absolutely. The 60s, and to be adapted from a John Waters film.
It's really hard to do.
No small feat, and this is awesome.
I'm going to go 8 on this one. It feels real good. There's a lot of things good about the way this movie looks.
Yeah.
Again, some of it's a little too stagey, as it's supposed to be in a lot of parts, but it's like obviously stagey.
Yeah, there's a lot of parts where it's like, oh, okay.
You don't see a lot of the world.
No, you see Baltimore in like that opening shot, and then the rest of the time you're like, we could be anywhere, probably Toronto, because it's always
that's
Toronto.
That's where they shot this thing. And then eventually it's like, sing a song about Baltimore! It's like, Baltimore!
We got crabs!
It's the 60s, who doesn't?
Yeah, hey. 8 for style and tone. Screenplay.
It's a musical. it's fine. There's not a whole lot of one-liners. Not supposed to be a whole lot of one-liners in this thing. It's all about the music. Screenplay, right. I'm going to go with a 5 because music is next. What is too much music?
Oh, so we're going from last week, not enough music, to this week, maybe too much?
Yeah, I kind of wanted a little bit of exposition at points. You have the whole situation with Michelle Pfeiffer and Christopher Walken when she's trying to sleep with him. And then right away, it dives another musical number with John Travolta and Christopher Walken. It's one of those like, no, I don't need you to talk about how great things are because things are not great. This needs to get addressed.
Right. We need to live in this moment for a second before we kiss and make up. You're not wrong. There needs to be
breathing room,
a little less music in this musical, which feels weird to say.
It does feel weird to say. That being said, the music's really, really, really good.
It's so good. Mark Shaiman and co-lyricist Scott Whitman, the same people who did the songs for the Broadway musical, adapted the work for this movie. They did a really good job. Grammy-nominated soundtrack.
This is a tough one to pull off just because of how much music there actually is. And it was definitely a choice by Shankman to say, like, no, we're going to go wall to wall. We have to. This is how we're going to tell the story.
Yeah.
Which is why he got the score that he did. Music, 8.
Next up is box office.
I know this had a big opening weekend. I remember this coming out.
Okay, as somebody who worked at a movie theater when this came out, I can tell you it had a pretty good weekend. But it did finish 3rd in the box office its opening weekend.
Wasn't this thing like the biggest musical movie opening of all time?
I want to say yes.
Until the following year when Mamma Mia came out, because no one's stopping the Abbott train. Let's get real, people.
Yeah, Mamma Mia definitely blew this thing out of the water. It had the unfortunate position of coming out the week after a Harry Potter movie.
Oh, that'll do it.
But more surprising than that is the movie that finished first this weekend was I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that was a time.
Yeah. It was Chuck and Larry, then Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, then Hairspray, and then Transformers in week 3, Ratatouille in week 4, Live Free or Die Hard in week 4, License to Wed, 1408, Evan Almighty, and Knocked Up, rounding out the top 10.
I'm about to look up the Rotten Tomatoes score. While you do this box office thing, I'm just going to join you in hell, I think.
Oh, okay.
I really don't know. I have no clue.
I have no idea. This movie cost $75 million to make.
That's a big boy number.
That is a big boy number. But it ended up making $203 million, which is like a 271% return, which is an 8 on our scale.
Solid.
Respectable 8.
Oh, dear.
Oh, I don't like that face.
No, I regret popping that beer open the freshie because there's a window and it's not wide.
Okay.
Let me drink this just a little bit because I don't want to tell you what they are, but there's an average. Like, in between them that you made the rule we have to drink if we hit the average also.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm worried about.
You're worried about the average? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the final category is impact on the industry.
It's just another movie musical.
It's a big one, but it is just another movie musical. There was talks of a sequel for a while. New Line got John Waters, Adam Shankman, Mark Shaiman, and Scott Whitman together to write a sequel. And it would have focused on Tracy in the 60s, the late 60s with the British invasion, the hippie movement, Vietnam War, all that. But John Travolta publicly announced that he's not a big sequel guy. And they were like, okay, and they scrapped it. So Hairspray 2 White Lipstick was canceled in 2010. But John Waters did say in 2019 that he wrote a sequel for HBO that has never gone into production.
I don't know if that's a shame or not.
It's hard to say.
So, like, digesting my feelings. So, impact on the industry on this thing, 6?
It feels high, actually.
I thought so, too. Well, let's go 5, then. It's 5. Not big. It's not small. It's another notch in the Travolta belt, if nothing else. And it's a good notch.
Yeah.
He's so good in this movie.
That's going to give Hairspray a total score.
Oh, God. Hold on. Let's just let this thing breathe for a second. I'm scared.
Just for a second.
Can you give me the first number of what it will be?
It's a 7.
We're safe.
The final score for Hairspray is a 74, which is very low.
That is very low. Consider we've not done well with Musical Month in terms of
we've what not the people scored want. Musicals well.
No, not at all. For us being sluts, we've done a terrible job. I'm almost happy to be leaving this month because we've completely dropped the ball.
We really did.
On Rotten Tomatoes, critically, this movie has a 92%, which is higher than I thought it would be.
Damn. That is higher than I expected.
The audience score is 84%.
Oh, wow. So we were pretty far off.
And I think my favorite Letterboxd review that I read for this one was Hairspray gets released 2007. Obama wins the election in 2008. Coincidence?
Look, I already said all I have to say about stuff in ballot boxes.
That's very, very fair. Hairspray was a phenomenal pick. Secretly a little upset Cats didn't get picked. Secretly
a little
not
bit.
Upset that Dave Novak wasted an entire weekend watching the movie Cats. But he will
Pretty
be on next week when we start our new month.
Speaking of which, I'm ready to tear off that Band-Aid, so why don't you go ahead and beer me a movie?
Hey, Brian.
Yeah?
We do a little show on Patreon that's called Crappy Hour.
We sure do.
Where we talk about some of the worst movies ever made.
Yeah, we do that, don't we?
Next month, we're bringing Crappy Hour to the main channel.
Hell yeah.
For the entire month.
Just a bunch of bad movies.
And the first pick is not from me.
Oh.
Because it is from our guest, Dave Novak, who's going to be joining us. And I told him to pick the crappiest movie he can think of. And believe it or not, it's not Cats. But instead, he picked a movie that's starring Emma Stone, Stephen Merchant, Richard Greer, Liv Schreiber, Dennis Quaid, Greg Kinnear, Common, Will Sasso, Seth MacFarlane, Hugh Jackman, Kate Winslet,
what a cast.
Whole bunch of other people. We're going to be talking about 2013's Movie 43.
Amazing.
Is it, though? I've seen it too many times, and it's a segment-type movie, and
yeah.
Some of them land real well, and then some of them are the reason why it's on Crappy Hour.
It's going to be an adventure. It's going to be a difficult one to talk about, I think, but...
No way. I'm so excited. I wish you could feel my nipples right now. I really sincerely mean that.
No, I'm very excited. I've actually never seen it in its entirety. I've seen some of the segments from it, but...
I've shown you some segments from it.
Yeah.
Next week, Movie 43.
Until then, thank you guys for listening. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on whichever podcast platform you listen to us on. Send us your movie suggestions for next month's Crappy Hour listener pick. Just the worst movies you can think of. Start sending them to us, I guess.
Worst. The absolute worst. Go to town. Make us suffer. This is your chance.
Be sure to join us on Patreon this month for Weird, the Al Yankovic story.
It's a wild episode.
Because, of course, you get double picks for your listener pick when you join us on Patreon, and you get just so much bonus content that we've amassed over the years.
Years worth of bonus content. It's all over the place.
You can email us your movie picks, questions, or comments to beermeamoviepod@gmail.com, or you can join us on social media at beermeamovie, especially on our Facebook, where we put up a post asking for your questions and comments on our recording day.
First question, Jeff Miners. He wants to know, what was your first theater / Broadway show that you saw? Mine was Phantom.
Mine, I think, was Phantom, but it could have been Aladdin. I can't really remember.
Drastically different. Drastically.
Very different. Both excellent, though.
I think my second was Spamalot. That's a 1-2 punch right there. Spamalot's so good. It's touring all the time.
My first was almost Book of Mormon, but everybody I wanted to see it with bailed on me. So,
did you not go to the theater until you were just adult-aged?
No.
Okay, you're missing out on a big part of life here.
Yeah.
The theater's awesome.
Theater's great.
Phil Hot Take Hawkins, he's got a question for us. He asked, if you were to take the cast of Hairspray and recast them for Cats, what would that look like?
Having never actually seen Cats, my best guess is that it would look like Hairspray, but everybody had ears and buttholes. Visible buttholes. I assume they all have buttholes. But
oh, boy.
They'd be showing them off a whole lot more.
Yeah, that's definitely a thought. That's for sure.
What do you think, Dave?
What do I think? What I think is that a family of cats walked into a talent agency and said...
Nice.
That's just a long walk to get to an Aristocats joke. It's not worth it. It's the end of the episode. Brian, do you have anything else?
No, I have nothing else.
Fantastic. You guys are all the best. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for hanging out with us. Next week, we're starting a Crappy Hour month with Movie 43. We'll see you then.